There are a couple of dates that we want you to mark on your calendar to join Dr. Rob and me. The first is Monday, April 18th at the Plot Edge Ballroom in Grand Island. The event is free thanks to the generosity of Tom Strand of Strand Financial and Roger Nesbitt of Unified Ag Solutions. The social hour is going to start at 6. Program starts at 7. There will be a goodwill donation with all the proceeds going to the Nebraska Greats Foundation. In fact, Jim Rose is going to be on location with us as well. So mark your calendar now, and we will see you on April 18th. The second is Tuesday, May 17th at Cross Strain Draftworks at Millwork Commons in Omaha. A live recording, the Doc Talk podcast, with some of the best local craft beer you can drink. This place is absolutely awesome, and it's going to be the perfect hangout for the Big Ten baseball tournament and the College World Series. The Doc Talk podcast would not be possible without our generous sponsors, Husker Hounds, with two locations in the Omaha area, and online at huskerhounds.com. And attorney Connor Orr with the firm Erickson and Cederstrom. He's a litigator as well as a registered sports agent. You're going to hear more about both of these sponsors later on in the podcast. We do have a couple of sponsorships remaining for the year, so if you want to be part of one of the most popular football podcasts in the country, email us, doctalksports@gmail.com. Make sure to like our Facebook page. Just search Doc Talk Sports. Follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, @DocTalkSports, and you can follow me on Twitter as well, @TravisCreates. Also, give this episode a like, write a short review if you have time, as when you rate this podcast, well, guess what? More people tend to find us. This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast 2022, Episode 10. And welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. This is going to be a weird one because you guys are probably, you know, used to us recording on a Saturday or Sunday and getting it out. Here it is on a Wednesday night, the 6th of April. We're getting ready for the spring football game. And, well, the reason we're recording now is because we're not really going to have a spring game review because Dr. Rob he's going on vacation.
Going to go visit our daughter in Florida again.
So. Yeah, well, because you're a good dad, right? I mean, and that's what you do. You're a good dad.
I don't know about that. It's just a hell of an easy trip when the weather's like it's been up here in the spring. And you got a daughter who goes to school in Florida. You go down there to visit.
Yeah, see, I don't blame you. So, you know, because I called you that and said, hey, where are you watching the spring game? Do you want to watch it together? And you're like, yeah, no.
Tallahassee.
Yeah. I wish I could go to Tallahassee, but I can't.
You could. I mean, you could go there.
I could tell you
places to stay, great places to eat.
So we thought it would just be, you know, a good idea to get together before Rob went out of town. And then, because right when he comes back, we're going to be actually at the Plot Edge Ballroom in Grand Island. So if you can get to Grand Island, it's a free event. Basically, we're going to sit on stage and we'll talk for a little bit and we'll take questions.
Field questions.
Yeah, I mean, those are some of the best nights out there. So,
and we need to find out, like, is there any kind of like restrictions or censorship on this thing, or is it?
I fucking hope not.
Like, can we fucking drop F-bombs
and just talk? Well, here's what I'm going to do, and you know, it's funny because Jim Rose is going to be there representing the Nebraska Greats Foundation, right?
And that's an outstanding organization.
It really is, and what we want to get Jim on, and we'll probably do that after we do the Grand Island event. But you know, Jim's Mr. KFAB, right? I mean, that's very conservative radio. It's very, you know, by the book.
Little bit.
But at the end of the day, we are who we are. And I'll probably open up the program saying, you might hear us swear tonight. And if we say, you know, shit, piss, fuck, whatever, it's probably going to happen because we're having conversations.
There you have it.
Yeah. So if you think any less of us, I'm sorry, but if you listen to this podcast, you know they're going to drop it sometime, right? So here it is on a Wednesday night. We're drinking the cerveza. The Estrella Jalisco is what I believe it is. And the reason I pulled this out, Rob, yesterday morning I had a...
Yeah, Cinco de Mayo is still like a month away.
No, I know, but here's why I pulled it out. Is because yesterday morning, I wake up about 4:30 in the morning, right? There's a Facebook private message, and it's Kyle DeBuse. Remember Kyle, our Big Ten referee who's in there?
Which is still one of, like, if, dude, you want behind-the-scenes info... That was a great podcast. People need to go listen.
Totally agree with you. But all he said is, hey, what was the Mexican beer we had when the night we recorded? That's all he wanted to know. So I said, well, this is it. I got it at Costco. You can go pick some up. All I got was thank you, right? So in honor of Kyle DeBuse, we're drinking the Cerveza today. We're drinking the Estrella Jalisco. It's a very light beer. It's a Mexican beer, and you can pick it up at Costco.
It's a lager.
I don't know.
I'm looking.
I could use a lime, but you're like no fruit in your beer. You don't like putting fruit in your beer.
Unless it's actually brewed as like a sour or a, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Anyway, I'm okay with a little lime in there. It's not my favorite. I mean, if I'm like a Dos Equis, Negro Modelo is actually pretty good with a lime in it, a little bit.
And Negro Modelo is much better than regular Modelo, by the way. Especial. So Negro is so much better.
I mean, it's...
I think so.
That's a personal preference one, but I mean, Modelo in general, I mean, it's probably a...
Well...
It's a step up. It's a good beer. I like it. So, I'm a big Pacifico fan. I like Pacifico.
That's so the one. Weird thing about this podcast is that the more and more people are listening to this podcast, and I'm not bragging. I'm really thankful that people listen to this, but... Where it shifted, and I don't know if it's happened to you yet. It used to be, hey, love you guys on Channel 3. Love you guys doing Sports Sound Off. Which...
How many... Well, 2010? Was that the last year we did it?
2010.
2009, 2010?
Yeah.
Okay.
But now, more and more people come to me and go, love the podcast. And it's really weird not being... You know, because usually you got to put a face with the name, but people recognize the voices, which is nice. But I was in David City this past weekend. And good people up in David City. I was the MC for the David City Aquinas Gold Rush fundraiser, raised over $400,000.
Dude, Aquinas does not mess around.
They don't. They don't. And you know what? I loved it because they had, and the Moravecs up there, Trev Moravec, great guy, and his dad Russ was the auctioneer that night. We had some great auction items, Rob. We auctioned off to 80 tons of chicken shit.
80? Like as I assume is fertilizer.
Fertilizer that went for $9,000. They sold two lots, so it brought in $18,000. Okay, we sold 100 hours of combine time.
Okay, you know what? This is the kind of thing where I'm thinking about fundraisers. Auction off something people can use. Like, oh yeah, I could totally use that at work.
Now the weird thing is that coming from the city that I have to get used to. To go into a farming community, which I grew up in a farming community, but I have been out of the farm for a while. And let's be honest, I was never on the farm. You go to a high school fundraiser, and we auctioned off an AR-15. But it's
probably not going to. Well, I was going to say it's not. It wouldn't fly at like your standard fundraisers in Omaha. No. But that being said,
look, it's a hunting. I mean, it's a hunting rifle.
Yeah, it's a great varmint rifle. If coyotes are a problem, yeah. There you go.
And we I was two shotguns.
Yeah, too. I actually was at a fun. Well, I've been at a lot of fundraisers in the Omaha area. I mean, if it's like the Western Douglas County Ducks Unlimited, there's going to be firearms on the fundraising auction. Yeah. No big deal there, but that's kind of expected. It's a hunter's auction. We were actually at a teammate's auction where they actually auctioned off a commemorative Winchester rifle.
Really?
Yeah. Now it's kind of more of a wall hanger. I mean, it's a fully functioning firearm, but and it probably doesn't have the stigma that an AR has. But on the flip side, I mean, it's kind of one of those things. I can't crack jokes all the time. There's some truth to it. You know what? You cross that Platte River heading south and west out of Omaha. In any sense of recognition of the existence of Creighton just sort of disappears. Nebraska basketball and high school basketball, yeah. That's all you got once you get outside Omaha. It's kind of the same thing. You get outside of Omaha, maybe get outside of Lincoln, and all of a sudden there's certain stigmas that go away about certain things. So...
totally agree. It was a great time. Yeah.
Which I will say. So we, not so obviously not in football because I think Aquinas is Class C.
They're Class C1, I believe. Yeah.
So obviously not in football, but wrestling's a different sport. So most if not all wrestling teams tend to kind of cross those class boundaries when it comes to competition. It's weight based. And so, and actually there's some really, really great programs out there. Aquinas has just an insanely good high school wrestling program. And so my kids wrestle for Westside. We would butt heads with Aquinas period, usually at least twice a year, man. They do it right. And I mean, it's a really, really strong program there. And I was going to say, from a community support standpoint, it's pretty impressive.
And one more thing I want to get you caught up on, and I told you about it this morning, but I woke up this morning and I had a text message, and it's from a number I didn't know, right? It's like, hey, I'm going to be back in Omaha on the 20th, and I wonder if I can be part of the show. And I'm like,
and you're like, new phone, who dis?
Yeah, I'm like, who? Well, then I'm like, okay, I'm going to look at this. So before I say who dis, I go ahead and just look at the area code and I put it in to see what area code is coming, see if I can figure it out by then. And it pops up South Carolina. I'm like, Joe Mowgli is texting me at 4:30 in the morning. and I'm like, if this is Joe, you can come on this show anytime you want.
I'm going full Joe here. Any fucking time you want.
Exactly. And I'm telling you, if you haven't listened to the Joe Mowgli episode yet, go back and listen to it. I believe it's episode 8, and it is 7 or 8, but you're this year.
Terms of how fun it is a listen,
yes,
and informative, oh my God, it's great.
But I told my wife, I said, it's just really weird to have Joe, you know, at 4:30 in the morning say, hey, can I come on the show? Because before I had to go through his media people, I had to do all this stuff. He's like, hey, I'm going to be back in town. I think I want to come have a beer with you guys. I think nice. That'd be a lot of fun.
Nice.
And my wife's like, well, that's because you provided a safe space. He felt okay being here. I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever a safe space in this household means.
I just like the fact that he texted you at 4:30 in the morning, which is 5:30 out there, which is in my mind, a perfectly normal hour. But if you're around Mowgli even a little bit, he kind of strikes me as he's the kind of guy who, the way his brain works, I bet he sleeps like 4 hours a night, tops.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to be that level of financial success and career success.
Yeah, but
you
I mean,
have
there's,
to be, right?
There is, but I think there's some people who, I mean, there's a lot of people who work their asses off and never find that success. You've got to have that intelligence. And so I look at him and it's one of these things where, you know, here's the story, I played for the New York Giants. My rookie year, Herschel Walker was on the team.
I did not, I've never heard this.
Yeah, so Herschel was probably, I mean, he had gone New Jersey Generals, Dallas Cowboys, the huge trade that sent him to the Vikings that essentially got the Cowboys 3 Super Bowl titles in the 90s. And I think it was, I'm trying to remember, he either went from Minnesota to the Giants or went Minnesota, Philly, then the Giants. Philly was in there. I think he actually had 2 stops in Philly. Anyway, so he had a 1 year stint with the Giants in 1995, which was my rookie year. Now, a couple things. Nicest guy you'd ever want to meet. But I mean, this was still the Herschel Walker that you'd always heard these legends about. Like, you know what, he does 1,000 crunches a day and 500 push-ups a day, and which, by the way, that was totally true.
Really?
100%, not joking. And but one of the other kind of little like rumors that had been floating around since I was in elementary school was that Herschel Walker only sleeps like 1 to 2 hours a night. And so a couple of us guys on the Giants, I mean, I felt like we were like little kids, which compared to Herschel, we kind of were, because I mean, he'd already been playing pro football at that point in time for over a decade. And so we didn't even have enough guts to go ask Herschel this. We go to his wife, and I think her name was Cindy. So we go to Cindy and we're like, hey, got to ask you, we heard, like, is it true that Herschel only sleeps like 2 hours a night? And she goes, yeah, pretty much, yeah, because he'll go to bed around 1, maybe 2 a.m., and he'll usually get up around 4 a.m. most days. And we're like, holy crap, that's insane. And then I remember.
That's a work ethic, right?
And then I remember, no, just the way the guy's brain
okay.
was. But I remember one of us, it wasn't me, then asked her, really, why? And her answer was awesome. She goes, she goes, and she was like the most laid back, normal person you'd ever want to meet. And so like, this is coming from a person that sleeps like a normal 8 hours a night. She goes, I've actually asked Herschel that myself. And he says he gets bored sleeping.
How do you know if you're bored if you're sleeping?
I'm just saying that's what Herschel's wife said. but when we first had Joe on the podcast,
yeah.
that was almost kind of the impression I got. Is like, here's a guy that I bet gets bored sleeping.
Because he's the type of guy that every minute me is so I think he feels he can get something accomplished in every
he
single
can
minute
accomplish
of the day.
Something.
Yes.
And not everybody can do that. Actually, I would even say most people cannot. I cannot. Like I think I work hard. I think I do a pretty good job at what I do. I don't sit around and go like, you know, I could be doing something right now. I could be accomplishing something right now. Joe's the kind of guy who sits around and is like, oh, I just wasted 7 minutes.
Yeah, that you're exactly right, because he could have been making money within that 7 minute period, right? I mean, time is like money.
It is, but I don't even know for people like that. I don't even know if money's the primary mover and shaker.
Or thinking about how to make the world a better place, how to end the NCAA.
That part I love, but
I'm not joking there.
I know, and we need to talk to him about that, because that's going to be the kind of the subject matter I want to hit him up on is. The playoff, the NC2A, where do we go from here with the NC2A? But he's the kind of guy that sits around and thinks about, because if you listen to that first podcast, how he talks about his family, how he talks about the guys who played for him, the coaches and administrators who brought him back into football, and then the players he's coached at Coastal Carolina since then. He's a guy that sits around and wonders, hey, how can I make an impact? How can I help somebody out? And he really does. But that's the kind of thing, I guarantee you, he sits around and he's like, ah, that was 7 minutes. I could have done something with that.
And that's why I think, but you know what? The fact that he wants to come on here and spend 60 to 90 minutes, maybe he feels like he can do something by communicating on this podcast.
Communication's a tool.
It really is. Of course, this Husker podcast would not be possible without our generous sponsors like Husker Hounds, two locations in Omaha, one block south of 84th and Center, and 171st in Lakeside Hills Plaza. If you haven't seen it yet, we posted on the Doc Talk podcast Facebook
page.
Scott's video, yeah. We posted that today. Scott's got a new commercial out. I think Channel 6 in Omaha did that for him. But look for that to be airing, and when you need to dress up, whether it's for the spring game, for Husker baseball games, or anything, make sure to go to Husker Hounds, two locations in the Omaha area. At some point in your life, you're going to need a lawyer, okay? And we want you to call Connor Orr with Erickson and Cedarstrom. Connor's actually going to be with us on May 17th when we're at the Cross Strain Brewery. He's going to come down. We're going to interview him. That's going to be a long podcast. I just want everybody to prepare. That could be like a two and a half hour podcast, because we're going to have lots of interviews.
You know what? Guess what? You can pause it. Come back later. You don't have to listen in one chunk.
And it makes it very easy. But besides being a litigator, he's also a sports agent. We'll ask him why he got into that. He's a Jaysker, though. He's a big Creighton basketball fan, a big Husker football fan.
You know, I make fun of the Jayskers a lot.
Because you like to poke. You like to poke the bear.
Stir the pot a little bit. Dude, when Creighton does well, it's good for Nebraska. I'm just saying.
I don't know if my daughter wants me. Let me tell you how valuable sports is to universities. There's a reason Nebraska football needs to be successful, because it feeds the overall university. You can go ask the state for money. You can ask taxpayers for money. Without sports being profitable and good, the university will not thrive. And let me give you an example. Abigail, I'm sorry if I'm sharing secrets. When my daughter started at the University of Mississippi as the director of marketing for student housing, their enrollment was so bad, so bad, Rob, they had to close one dormitory. Okay. And so the freshmen
I'm wincing because my dad was director of housing at Nebraska for nearly 40 years.
They shut down a dormitory because freshmen weren't coming in. Their big push was, how do we get more sophomores to stay on campus? We need sophomores to stay on campus to fill these dorms. Okay. So, well, look what's happening. They weren't winning in football. There was no reason to go to Oxford, Mississippi. 2 years within Lane Kiffin. 2 years. I get a call from her today. She goes, Dad, you're not going to believe the shitstorm we're dealing with. I said, what?
They don't have enough room to house kids.
They are 1,000 rooms short.
I laugh because, I mean, that's a serious, I shouldn't say serious problem. That's a problem any university wants.
Yes.
But it's an interesting thing because, I mean, most universities, in terms of making money, if you're a state university, which Ole Miss is, your two primary revenue streams are actually athletics, and all but a handful tend to actually athletic departments tend to run in the red. So it brings in a lot of money, but it burns a lot of money too. Housing tends to actually be one of the very few university departments
that makes money.
Especially
when you throw board in on that. When you throw the food in there, you're making lots of money.
It is. So the housing departments, which I know because my dad did this for 40 years, they run the food service. They run the room. I mean, it's room and board. That's the revenue. Believe it or not, that is actually the revenue. It's not tuition.
No,
tuition is pennies for most universities. Room and board is where it's at, and that's where they make their money. And if you're not filling rooms, there you go. They will, you know, the whole adage, hey, we got to spend money to make money.
Yep.
When successful universities make money, they're building dormitory. They're building residence halls. That's where the money's coming from.
And when she told me that, I mean, their goal this year, Rob, was to have 250 to 300 more freshmen than they had a year ago.
How many more did they?
They're 1,000 over.
Good Lord, the Lane Kiffin effect.
But it's
sports. Sports has that effect.
Yeah, it's funny because we were talking, and she was in a meeting, and I said, There's two words why you're in this problem. And I said, it's Lane Kiffin. She goes, Dad, it's funny. I said that in a meeting. She goes, you know why this happened? Like, because everybody wants to come to Ole Miss and COVID's over. She goes, no, it's Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin is bringing in, because it's a fun style of football to watch. You're winning. And he's goofy on social media. And people want to be a part of it.
He's a personality on that campus.
Now, I'm not saying you have to be a personality, but if Scott Frost in Nebraska starts winning football games consistently again and begin good, your enrollment's going to go up. People are going to want to go to school there because it's the cool place to be, right?
Yeah, that matters to kids coming out of high school.
It does. It matters a lot that it's the cool place to be. You know what probably is benefiting right now? I bet I'm not saying enrollment is up yet. How much do you think the applications for St. Peter's is going up because of the NCAA basketball tournament?
Oh, easily.
I mean, you know what's going on.
They just lost their star coach and star player.
But people are like, St. Peter's, never heard of this place. You start checking it out. And
okay,
like,
I lived in New Jersey for nearly half a dozen years. I never heard of St. Peter's.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
When Northern Iowa beat Kansas about 10 years ago in the NCAA tournament, the applications for Northern Iowa went through the roof.
See, that kind of surprises me because they usually beat Iowa State and Iowa every couple of years.
But that's a regional thing, though, right? No, but when you're on a stage like the NCAA tournament, I just deflected your joke right there. just totally fucking just looked at you and said, Stop it.
That one was teed up.
But that is how important sports are to universities. And when you say, why do we spend money on sports? Why does sports usually get a blank check and kind of operate as their own shadow government within the university? That's why.
Did you just call sports a shadow government? Well,
wrong?
No, it's kind of true though. And you say that, and I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about as I'm like opening up beers here. Sorry,
that's fine.
I gotta concentrate. I'm the one who actually brings the I got the pocket leather, man. So like every time I come to Travis's house, I'm the guy that actually pops open the beer bottles for Trav. No, I mean, that is kind of true. I mean, it's there is an economic system on every college campus that revolves around sports. And if you look at it at Nebraska, I mean, it has a massive impact. The joke we always made when we played down there was that we paid for the English department and the law library. And I'm not saying that's 100% true, but money came from the athletic department ran in the black and the housing department ran in the black. And those two departments, money funneled out of those departments into the rest of the university whenever funds were needed, which is essentially about 100% of the time. So if you've got a successful athletics program, it's huge in terms of what that does for a university in terms of recruitment as well as, money.
Yeah, money. So,
and if you even look at it, I mean, we kind of talked a lot about over the last year, a lot of the discussion revolved around my son, his recruitment. So NAIA schools, Division III schools, Division II schools, it's the exact same story there at that level as well, too. If you bring in a bunch of athletes, those are kids who, the vast, vast majority of kids, once you get outside of Division I, are all partial scholarship kids. And I'm talking about athletes. And so the more of those kids that you can get on your campus, that's more kids that are paying at least partially for school. And that's money.
Yep.
So, I hate saying education rides on the almighty dollar, but to a fair amount it does.
Well, let's bring up education and the almighty dollar because, and we're going to get to the spring game in a bit. But ESPN released a report just tonight, right? So the NCAA, I think last year, approved an academic bonus that universities can pay players. Okay, you can pay.
God, that would have been freaking nice. I guarantee I would have racked.
So you can pay an academic bonus payment up to $5,980 to their athletes this year, right? That's a pretty nice
little
bonus.
Like per year.
Yeah, per year.
Okay. Do they list a criteria?
They don't. So I don't know what that is. But here's what I'm going to get into. When you walk into Memorial Stadium, they have the sign on the side that says how many academic All-Americans has Nebraska had.
It's bunches. Like, it's got a bunch.
Bunches. So this year, only 22 FBS schools out of 130 say that they have plans in place to provide academic bonus payments. Nebraska's not one of them.
Is not
one of them. So here I'm just going to read the 22. Arkansas, Auburn, Clemson, Colorado, Connecticut, Florida, Iowa State, Kentucky, LSU, Miami, Missouri, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Ole Miss, Oregon, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Texas Tech, Washington, and Wisconsin. Now, 34 said they have not yet decided if or when they will start to pay academic bonuses. 20 said they will not make a bonus payment this year, but plan to make them in the future. 15 said they have no plans to pay academic bonuses. 10 responded to a public records request by saying they have no relevant documents to plan of a plan to share or by providing documents that disclose no information about the existing plan to make academic payments. Are you surprised Nebraska's not on that list? I kind of am. Or is it to the point where Trev comes in July, he's got more shit to handle than worry about giving academic bonuses out?
Well, I'm trying to digest all this. This is kind of interesting to me.
I didn't mean to surprise you.
No, it's a great subject matter to talk about. I mean, essentially you're saying you're going to give student athletes a stipend?
Yes.
For being a student athlete.
Yes, now, for performing.
I would assume there's some criteria.
Yes, I would agree with you on that.
I don't think they're going to shell out $5,000+ to every single student athlete.
No, you have to meet an academic bonus, I'm sure, on an individual basis, right?
Yeah.
I
mean, that would be my assumption.
Dean's list, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, when you rattled off that list, I guess the thing that I was looking for there when you read off those, what was it, 22 schools?
Yep.
Okay.
So I didn't mean to cut you off. Some schools have opted for higher hurdles for their athletes to receive the money. At Missouri, athletes will receive $2,400 for reaching academic eligibility. Are you fucking kidding me? Just for being eligible? okay, but need a GPA of 3.5.
Well, that's like 95% of them anyway.
They'll get the full amount if it's 3.5 or higher. Iowa State plans to hold all bonus money if its athletes accrue throughout their college career and pay it in a lump sum if and when they graduate.
Really? Yes. Okay. That's interesting.
So you can kind of do what you want with this. So Iowa State's saying, hey, you can make this money, and when you graduate...
But you actually have to graduate and get that degree.
Yeah, you don't get to stay here and not graduate.
Oh, I love it.
But that, if we're going to put the student-athlete part of it,
but that could be... I mean, you're talking, let's say it's 4 years, $5,000... You're talking about a $20,000, $25,000 payment to kids upon graduation.
And nobody says you have to be the starter here, right? What, and this is where I think it really benefits those kids that aren't going to make a lot of NIL money. Because the kids are making the NIL money,
which
they don't give a fuck about that.
Which, you know, that's the thing that... So when you rattled off the 22 schools, the thing that went through my head was I'm looking like, okay, well, what's the pattern here? Is this all SEC schools?
There's five Big 12.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's the thing. This was SEC. It was Big 12. It was Pac 12. Big 10.
Wisconsin was in there.
Yes. So you mentioned
Wisconsin, and that's the only Big 10 school. Wisconsin.
Okay, that's kind of interesting. The thing I wonder is where does NIL money come into this in terms of, hey, we don't have to do this because we got NIL money. And I mean,
yeah, I get if you look it, but at not like everybody's going to get NIL money. Not every. I mean, you've got.
Okay, hold on a second. Don't remember the cardinal rule. The major mistake we made when we first looked at NIL was we underestimated the shit.
True. I'll give you that. That's fair.
I mean, it used to be we were sitting there going, okay, well, there's like outside of Cam Jurgens, the starting alignment, I mean, somebody might end up making $1,500. There you go. I mean, now they're talking about if you're a starter, you're looking at six figures of NIL.
That's what Casey Thompson said on Bussin' with the Boys.
And I'm not doubting that at all. That if you're a starter, the potential is there. If you're at a school like Nebraska that has the fan base and fan support of Nebraska, which there's actually been a fair amount of discussion about that in terms of the fact that if you look at Nebraska, that for lack of a better phrase, has kind of sucked for almost 20 years. You had some very, I mean, in my opinion, quite frankly, if you win 9 or 10 games a year, that's pretty damn good.
Absolutely.
I think Nebraska fans are realizing how hard that actually is. Outside of what Pelini did, Mike Riley had one 9-win season, but it was kind of smoke and mirrors. I think Callahan had one 9, maybe 10 win season.
I think that's the year they went to.
They went to the big
12 championship.
Went
game.
Went to the
colder,
title game.
Colder than shit down in Kansas City.
Got smoked by Oklahoma.
Yep.
It's one of those things where I look at that and I just.
You're drawing a blank.
Yeah, I mean, it's... it's hard to do. I mean, that's the thing. It's amazingly, amazingly hard to do. And I think if you can get that 8, 9, 10 wins, that's actually pretty impressive. But anyway, I'm tangenting here.
You did. You tangent.
I do that all the time, especially when I'm drinking beer. Anyway, the bottom line here is, though, is that when you look at the schools, when you look at the NIL money available, and you look at a place like Nebraska, where Casey Thompson comes in, and like I said, I think he's 100% correct, most of the starters are going to have the potential to get 5 to 6 figures here. It's not going to be the $500, the $1,500. This is going to be tens of thousands of dollars for these kids. If you're a school that can provide that, you yourself even said it about 7 minutes ago, a $5,000 academic bonus isn't going to have much impact.
But if I'm a scholarship kid that's on the third team that's not going to get capitalized on a lot of that, I want the that $6,000 payment. Plus, you got coaches now whose bonuses are tied to academic performance. Hey, you help me get a bonus, I'm going to help you get a bonus.
And that would be the thing where I'd love to see this play into, is that it's a motivational thing, which I think is, was it Iowa State you were saying that has it tied to graduation? Yeah. I mean, that's genius.
Yeah.
I mean, you're telling these kids, hey, you stick around and do this, you get that degree. There's, like I said, that's 20, 25 grand when you graduate. That's kind of impressive.
Yeah, here's a check.
I say 2025, potentially 25 to almost 30 grand.
So being the jerk I am, if I'm a player now, I'm going to go, oh, you're going to hold that in escrow? Okay, do I get freaking interest on the money that you're holding on in a bank account for me?
I guarantee you they've worked it legally to not have to worry about that, which, I mean, and there'd be some more there. I don't know how much, if it's worth fighting over, but.
But I just thought it was interesting, for as much as Nebraska boasts about its academic All-Americans and its student-athlete experience from an academic standpoint, not on that list. Now, I'm not saying they won't be. I'm just saying they're not on that initial
list. I think you hit the nail on the head, though. I think it's an NIL thing for Nebraska, where they're sitting there going, like, we don't have to worry about $5,000 a year because these guys are going to be getting whatever, they're tens of thousands a year. I mean, the guys, there are going to be guys who are not going to be making four, five, six figure dollar amounts in terms of NIL money. And then that's where it affects it, is a guy like that. I mean, if you're a guy who, like you said, is a third stringer who is pulling a 3.9 GPA, yeah, you want that $5,000-$6,000 a year.
Yeah, you can go buy a really nice car with it as soon as you graduate. You can take a gap year, probably, if you wanted to say, you know what, I'm gonna take this $25,000 and I'm gonna live frugally and I'm gonna go to Europe for like and take a gap year before I have to get a job, which I highly recommend. You had a
that
gap.
Would have been.
You had like a couple gap years because you played in the National Football League before you had to go do the real stuff.
Yeah, like half a dozen. If that counts, I had half a dozen gap years. Not a lot of time in Europe, though. But
oh, man. So the spring game's coming up on Saturday. This has been it's been interesting because I believe Michigan's already had its spring game. Iowa and Iowa State just started their spring practice.
So University of Missouri, they play their spring game smack in the middle of spring ball.
Hold on. So they played the spring game and then still continue to practice?
Yeah, so they – some.
That's
we've
different.
Talked again. We've talked about this on the podcast. My nephew goes to Missouri, plays football there. So I asked my brother about a week and a half ago, hey, how's it going? What's Isaac saying? What's his thoughts on it? And all positive, all good stuff. But he was like, yeah, they just had their spring game. And I'm like, oh, they're done. And he goes, no, they got two more weeks left. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? And he goes, they practice for a couple of weeks, then have the spring game. And then they practice for a couple more weeks after that. And I don't know fully the reason for that. I almost wonder if it's, hey, we're going to do this for the fans, and then we're going to actually get back to work and not worry about the spring game. We're just going to worry about getting a workout and player evaluation and letting guys compete for starting jobs, so on and so forth.
What do you think of and Nebraska doesn't do this. Iowa State does, and Iowa's done it in the past. And I know people are going, this is a fucking Nebraska sports podcast, not an Iowa-Iowa State one. But I'm just throwing, because you do want to grow the sport statewide, right? So Iowa and Iowa State have both gone to high schools to have public viewings of practice. Said, you know what, we're going to go to, so let's say, hey, we're going to go out to Grand Island or Kearney, we're going to practice.
And have a practice.
And it's open to the public.
Even a couple practices.
Yeah, and it's open to the public just to come watch.
I think it'd be fucking genius.
So do I. You come to Omaha, you go, you know what, we're going to go to Burke. We're going to go to Westside. We're going to hold practice at Westside.
That would
come
be
on
cool.
out and watch. I think it's a great idea.
That I think would be cool. I mean, I'm one of those guys where, and I think this was one of your ideas, God, like a couple of years ago, where you had said, how cool would it be if Nebraska, instead of a spring game or even a non-spring game scrimmaged against South Dakota State, Northern Iowa.
Yeah.
Hell, see if KU or Iowa State wants to come in.
Just something different besides.
Oh my God, how awesome would that be?
I think it'd be great. I think it would be. I mean, hell, volleyball plays a different competition in the spring.
Almost everybody does that. Yeah, I mean, think about like Nebraska basketball. The men's team.
They do the scrimmages.
Exhibition games. Have an exhibition. Call it an exhibition game. Do it in the spring. I mean, it's one of those things where if you lose, you're like, yeah, it's no big deal. It was an exhibition game. We were just practicing. If you win, it's like, hey, this was really cool because we showed what we could do against real competition.
Speaking of that, what do you expect for the spring game? I thought Tom Chattel in the Omaha World Herald hit it on the nail on the head in his column, but the only thing Nebraska has to do on Saturday is get confidence. Would you agree with that? I mean, they just need...
Yeah, but how do you...
I don't know. I don't know how you do it.
See, I fucking hate this kind of shit, and I love Tom.
Here, and I said it was a great idea.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I just, you know, here's my thing. How do you get confidence scrimmaging against the same guys you've been practicing against for the last 6 months, 2 years, whatever? Where is the evaluation out? Where's the real measuring stick that comes out of that?
Well, Mickey Joseph said, you know, everything we do around here is competitive. Everything we're going to do is compete to be competitive.
It is. Now, I think you can compete within the team, and I love that. I absolutely do. But at the same time, it's one of these things where I'm just like, yeah. I mean, you need a better measuring stick than that. And I think the only measuring stick that's going to count is when you see the performance in the fall.
Yeah, because I'll agree with you. Maybe I fell for the headline. Maybe I fell for liking Tom's column. But
you just love Tom.
But you're right.
I love Tom, too. Don't get me wrong, but.
You're not going to know confidence until you face an opponent, and if they kick you in the mouth, you're not going to know if you're confident.
Exactly. I mean, I guarantee you, I was plenty confident after my freshman spring ball until I had to go out there against, I mean, I'm not kidding you, Utah State, Iowa State, Colorado State. Holy shit, this shit's for real.
Well, an example of confidence would be Kansas. You're down 15 in the national championship game at halftime, and you come back out and you win. You got to have confidence, come back on the court going, we still have a chance to win this thing.
Yeah.
Because 15 in basketball is a big number.
It is.
That was the largest.
That was pretty impressive. Yeah. Although, there was a little smoke and mirrors. It's not like Carolina was kicking the shit out of them as much as it is. Kansas could not get a ball to actually fall through that hole the first time.
That is true. I will give
God, it. I mean, they're missing, I mean, the equivalent, that was missing warm-up level layup.
So do you worry about the smoke and mirrors there? I mean, if Casey Thompson comes out and has
big time.
Because you know what the fans do? Oh, my God, this is the second coming of Christ.
Oh, yeah. Nebraska loves the backup quarterback type syndrome. It's one of those... Like you look at any team, the second string quarterback is everybody's favorite. He's not making plays, but he's not screwing anything up either. He represents 100% potential. That's Casey Thompson right now. You know, my worry is that, again, and I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, my worry is looking at spring ball. You know, you've got Corcoran now. You got Teddy out. I mean, Teddy, in my mind, is the best offensive lineman on the team right now, hands down. And he's coming off a really nasty knee injury. He needs to be in that lineup in the fall for this offense to click. Not for the offensive line to have some to gel. I'm talking about for the offense as a whole to click. You need Prohaska in there at left tackle.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up the offensive line because Clint actually wrote in an email today to us, and it just falls at the right time. Over the past couple of years, this is an email now, there have been a great deal of conversation revolving around the offensive line performance. There seems to be a debate between...
That's because it sucked.
There seems to be a debate between scheme versus execution. I believe you discussed the complexity of Nebraska's blocking schemes being among the toughest in the nation, and maybe Oregon was about the same level. I may be wrong, but that's what I'm trying to remember. That's what he says. For the casual fan, offensive blocking schemes are very difficult to understand. I agree 100%, and if you start talking schemes, Clint, it usually goes over people's head and you make people feel stupid. Yes, it's simple to see on a whiteboard, but it's difficult to recognize schemes while watching a game. No matter how hard he tries, he says, to figure out what's going on, it always looks like everyone is just kind of blocking the guy in front of them or some variation of that. After watching the upcoming spring game, I would enjoy listening to you guys talk about blocking schemes that you see Coach Raiola implementing and explain the difference between the old and the new. This is not to talk derogatory manner about Coach Austin, just hopefully an opportunity to educate the listeners about what they consider to be a complex part of the game.
Okay, well, I guess it's kind of complex. Although I'd say if you out and block the guy across from you, you're going to win a lot of football games. So it's, when we talk about schemes, scheme can mean assignments. Like, okay, well, is the left guard actually going to come down on the nose guard and the center is going to pull around and get the middle linebacker, or does the center just kind of drive block the nose guard and the guard goes straight up to the linebacker? I mean, there's assignment scheme, and then there's also scheme which goes into, I guess I called it more of like a style, I guess, in terms of how offensive linemen block. Over the last several years, and this goes back to Callahan, it was the even for a chunk during when Pelini was the coach in Lincoln, when you look at what Tim Beck taught, the kind of the scheme that he wanted, definitely with Riley, in my opinion, definitely with Austin as well, they used a blocking scheme that was almost like screening guys off. Imagine an offense, or imagine a defender in basketball defending against an offensive player in basketball. If you think of that defender as the offensive lineman, they're trying to screen guys off from the basket. Not a lot of contact, not necessarily a lot of physicality. They're just trying to stay in between the defender and where the defender's trying to go. Now, the problem with this is that if any one guy has a breakdown, in essence, gets pushed backwards, it blows up the entire play. And so it's way easier to show this on a whiteboard if we had one, which you told me we're actually going to be working on here.
Well, I got to pay for it, but yeah, we're
I know,
we're
it's
do that.
Coming. We're By July, we're going to have one.
Okay, I was hoping by September, but that's fine.
Either way, we're going to move this up. So anyway,
if somebody wants to be the whiteboard sponsor, I'll put your name all over the whiteboard.
There we go.
We'll do social media videos.
There we go. No, but what Donovan's teaching is kind of essentially, which, people have been talking about the scheme, the new scheme that Raiola's teaching in Lincoln. And in my mind, I guess it hasn't seemed like that big of a deal, because to me, this was what we ran, which was a very aggressive blocking style where the goal was to try and get movement up front, to try and actually end block, push the line of scrimmage backwards towards in the defensive position backwards, not backwards for the offense, but for the offense, move the line of scrimmage forward. For the defense, move that line of scrimmage backwards. And I think our goal was a yard and a half every single play. And so the idea was, we're going to push the guy across from us. We got to get at least a yard to a yard and a half of movement every single play on that defender. So if I'm going to line up and block the guy across from me,
that Cervais is making us belch. I just belched and I didn't shut my mic off.
Oh my gosh, it's kicking my ass.
I know. I'm just gonna, I'm holding it. I'm just gonna let a big old one out.
Do it. I love it. Anyway, but the idea behind it is you're literally trying to move the line of scrimmage. And if you got five guys doing that, you're going to get yardage every single time. I mean, kind of the idea is if one guy breaks down, If one offensive lineman gets beat, defender knifes in there, makes a tackle, the running back's going to at least fall forward a yard and a half, maybe a couple of yards. You're going to get a little bit of a gain out of it. If everybody does their job, you're going to get about a 4 to 5 yard gain out of it at a minimum. Well, if you get a 4 yard gain with every play, you're going to win a lot of football games.
True. True.
So that, I mean, that was the idea behind it. It's a very, very physical and aggressive blocking scheme. Now, when you look at some of the coaches that Nebraska had that implemented this, hey, we're just going to screen guys off. We're not going to necessarily push them backwards. We're just going to kind of insert ourselves in between the defender and the ball carrier and hope we don't get pushed back. That works, but it only works if you've got five NFL caliber guys. And when I say that, it's got to be true NFL caliber guys. You need a Will Shields and a Zach Wiegert and a Finotti, a Cam Jurgens.
A Rob Zadiska.
I was okay. But I mean, it's you got to have five guys of that caliber.
No, I know.
Otherwise, it's not going to work. And so the next question I'd say is, tell me at any point from, let's say, 2001, which the Colorado and Miami games notwithstanding, tell me a time from 2001 until now, 21 years later, where you've had 4 to 5 NFL caliber guys on that offensive line.
Oh, you can't.
No, not at all.
So is...
You've had occasional guys. You've even had... I would even go as far to say there's been times they have had 2, maybe 3 NFL caliber guys. The kicker is that I think a lot of those NFL caliber guys actually didn't develop and become NFL caliber until they'd spent a couple years on a practice squad in the NFL.
So is the offensive line the most important position to watch during the spring game?
I think the two things that get brought up are special teams and O-line. I mean, if you hang around social media.
Yeah, but can you...
That's what people are worried about.
But you can't gauge special teams in a spring game. Can't.
No, I don't think you can. I also have... Actually, I have a lot of faith that that's the one area that is going to get cleaned up. And the reason I say that is, one, they finally dedicated a guy to special teams. They got a special teams coach. Two, you got a guy, I mean, whether Bill Bush is a good coach or not, the guy's freaking dedicated to his job. You got a guy who's going to go out there and he's going to pour his heart and soul into this, and I think he's going to do a pretty goddamn good job. You know, you clean up special teams even a little bit, there's at least 3 more wins last year. I think that's where you see a big change. And hopefully we see that carry over into the season in terms of more wins. The offensive line is the place where I've got the big question mark, and I have for the last couple of months. I mean, it's you lost your center. I mean, it's one of those I think Trent Hickson's actually a really good football player. He's been taking tons of snaps at center. Hopefully he's the guy. Hopefully he's the guy that comes out, locks down that position, and carries it going forward. But we're going to need 5 guys. And, I mean, you've still got your best guy still trying to come back from a pretty bad knee injury. You lost your best offensive lineman from the previous year in Cam Jurgens. There was some shuffling on this line. You got a new coach. How is this going to pan out in terms of offensive line productivity? You're going to need to see some of these younger guys step up. You're going to need to see some more experienced guys step up and lock down some consistent starting jobs here so you got some continuity across the front. If they don't have that, this team is going to struggle, and I truly worry about that because, you know, we talked a lot last year about how the big 3 things that were preventing Nebraska from winning games, it was turnovers, it was penalties, and it was special teams miscues. A lot of those turnovers and a lot of those just general mistakes, the penalties, came on the offensive line. they've got some, that there's a big fix that needs to happen there. And until we see how that pans out on the offensive line, that's going to be a big question mark. And that's a question mark that does not get answered this spring because of those injuries to guys like Teddy.
So my advice, and I don't know if you would go along with this advice, if you're going to the spring game this weekend, right, go just to have fun. Go, don't leave there stressed out if you didn't see something you didn't like. Don't leave there all excited if you saw something you did. Just go there, have fun, go, you know what? You like what you see. You might like that they're running the football more. You might like the offense that Whipple's running.
I don't know if they're going to run it more with Whipple.
But just don't get too high. Don't get too low. Just enjoy it.
But that's what spring ball, that's what the spring game should be.
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, it's just from an evaluation standpoint as a fan, the spring game should be worthless. As a coach, it's the last scrimmage of spring ball. And yeah, you're going behind the scenes, you're watching that film, you're doing that evaluation. But I mean, from a fan standpoint, there is almost zero correlation to what you see during the spring game to what you're going to see in the fall.
I do want to bring this up because you're going to be gone till next week. And that is Bob Bowlesby resigned as the Big 12 athletic director.
He's, Ed Stewart, baby.
I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you.
I think it'll be a fucking crime if they do not hire Ed Stewart as the Big 12 commissioner.
Now, I will say this. It's going to be interesting. It's an interesting time in college football because this makes Greg Skansky from the SEC the senior most commissioner type guy, right? Because Big Ten's got a new one, ACC's got a new one, Pac-12's got. This is a critical time that needs serious leadership for college football.
And the Big
and Bob Bowlesby is a smart motherfucker, and he's. You know what? I know he was blindsided by Texas and Oklahoma. He saved the Big 12.
But for the most part, this is a guy that for a number of years has kept the Big 12 as a player.
He saved it the first time around after with everything was going to hell in a handbasket. And I think he saved it again. The college football is losing some pretty important leadership when a time that the playoff is around the corner, TV negotiations of the Big 12 are coming into play. It's just, that's a big
You've
big
got an
void.
Absolute sea change in the Big 12. Yes. I mean, again, you mentioned Oklahoma
conference.
And Texas, but I mean, imagine being the Big 12 and all the teams that are coming into it. Yeah. I mean, it's going to look, the Big 12 is going to look completely different 3, 4, 5 years
yes,
from now
is.
than it did 2 years ago.
So, Houston, Cincinnati, Central Florida. It's an interesting league.
BYU?
And BYU. Totally forgot about BYU.
Cougars, baby.
I mean, it's just going to be interesting. I think you just said, you know, with all the changes going on in college football, I'm out. I'm just wiping my hands of it. I've seen enough.
This is the stuff I love. Like, I could go on forever about conference realignment and playoffs, but
well, we know that we're not seeing playoffs till at least after the
2025.
Current
year. Yeah. Although, that still makes total sense to me.
It's a
money decision, and that's what drives all of this stuff. But you know, with Bowlesby, I'll be curious to see who they bring in. I look at a guy like Ed, and you've got a guy that he's played the sport. He's been in the business. He's been in that business at the university level at Missouri, and he's done it at the conference level with the Big 12 for years. The guy knows the game.
How smart is he too? Smart dude.
Oh my God. I would probably say there's about two or three guys that I know. And again, it seems weird because you'd think I'd say this about the medical world, and that's what I've done for the last 22 years is medicine. Probably the two smartest human beings I've ever met in my life, and it's kind of weird because they're both linebackers, were Ed Stewart at Nebraska and Derek Brooks from Florida State. might be the two smartest human beings I've ever met in my life.
Well, I'm just going to let you know, you're the smartest human being I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, Ed thought circles around me.
Oh, I don't believe that. Dr. Rob will be watching the spring game on television. He's just not going to watch it live, and we'll have a full review coming up.
I'm going to watch it. I'll have the highlights.
At the Plot Edge Ballroom in Grand Island on April 18th. I hope they let us swear out there. Well, I mean, what are they going to do? We're grown men. We can swear if we want.
God, I've been told there will be beer.
See, I'm driving, so you know what that means? I'm not drinking.
Weak.
I know. It is very, very weak.
We're not going to Uber?
No, we're not Ubering. No. Sorry.
You could grab one of our kids to drive us.
You know, Owen might be able to do that. make sure to like the Doc Talk Facebook page. Just search Doc Talk Sports. Also, follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. Follow me, Travis Justice, on Twitter at Travis Creates. Man, it's a fast hour. Dr. Rob, enjoy your vacation. Tell your daughter hi for me.
We'll do that. You know what we're going to do? We're going to eat some oysters.
Oh,
we're going to put a little crystal hot sauce on them. It's going to be good.
I'm jealous. Everybody enjoy the spring game. We'll be back, I don't know, in a week and a half with another Husker Doc Talk podcast. We'll talk to you next time.